is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Dan Hurley. Later in the program, we'll look at the revitalization of Hamilton, Ohio. But first, lightning bugs. Perhaps you remember catching them in a jar as a kid or just chasing them around the yard. I remember my parents reading me bedtime stories about them. But what causes them to flash that yellow light? And what can scientists learn from them? Joining me today to talk about fireflies are Director of Conservation and Stewardship at the Cincinnati Nature Center, Corey Christopher, and Education Director at the Center, Connie O'Connor. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to have you both here. Well, the thing that I thought was interesting is I've called them lightning bugs or fireflies my whole life, and come to find out they're beetles?
they are beetles.
Tell me more.
So they're beetles, so they're Coleoptera, but you can call them either lightning bugs or fireflies. I grew up in the South, so I call them lightning bugs. People in the North tend to call them more fireflies, but there's sort of pockets everywhere. So either one you call them, so it's all right.
But what makes them a beetle? I mean, what about them defines them as a beetle?
So they have what's called elytra. They're basically wing covers. So if you see any of the beetles around your yard, they have these really shiny, beautiful shells. Underneath those little shells, their back plates are actually protection for their really delicate wings. And so the presence of those elytra on their back basically is what puts them into the beetle family.
Kind of describe what a lightning bug looks like when it's not lighting up. What are you seeing?
Well, what makes all lightning bugs are that these beetles have to have a bioluminescent phase of their development, typically in the larva phase. So that's one of the things that makes them special. They have a shield that goes over their whole head, sort of a kind of like body armor. And so you can't see their eyes when you look straight down at them. But there's a lot of firefly mimics, other types of insects that sort of look like fireflies. So sometimes you can be tricked.
Well, it's interesting you talk about all of that. And I've gotten kind of close. I mean, I've certainly held them in my hand. I remember catching them when I was little. But I don't remember seeing all that. This helmet on the head or the covering must be pretty little.
It is. I think most people don't pay attention to that because they're so enamored by the glow. That's what they're looking at.
Why do they only glow at night? Do they light up during the day? We just don't notice it?
They're a diurnal and nocturnal fireflies. The ones that are out during the day actually don't have lights. It's not that we're missing them. It's just that the ones that are out during the day don't have what's called lanterns to actually light up. Only the ones that are active at night actually need those lanterns to communicate.
Well, and you bring up an interesting point here. You talk about the ones in the day and the ones at the night. Of course, I always thought there was one, but there are not. There are thousands and thousands of species. Tell us more. How many are out there?
2,000 species worldwide.
Mm-hmm. And about at least 20 species in this area of Ohio, probably more because we're finding new species all the time.
Well, what makes them different? What are they looking like that's different? What makes them different species?
So a few weeks ago, we had Lynn Faust, who's an international firefly lightning bug researcher. She gave a talk at the Nature Center, and the day before, she led a hike through the woods. It was a firefly hike, and they actually found a species, a state record, a species that had never been seen in the state before. And the way she knew it was different was its size, the fact that it didn't have a lantern, and even some of the markings on the elytra on the back. Sometimes they're outlined with white, other times they're not. And then there can even be different markings on the back of their thorax. So basically where their shoulder blades would be if they had shoulder blades. There'll be different markings there that tell you that it's a different species.
Well, you talk about going through the woods and finding them. Where do you even look? I mean, I know how to look for them at night. They light up. Where do you look in the day?
I think they'll find you. Yeah. You just walk out there. You'll find them. It depends. Each species has very specific habitat preferences. So some of them, the ones we're most familiar with, are the ones that are in the suburbs. They call them the flying jays. You'll know them. They're the ones that they glow and they sort of go up in a little hook in a J as they fly about, you know, face height over the grass. There's others that are only found in treetops. There's others that are only found in marsh habitat, Each one of the species is found in a different habitat at a different time of the season, a different time of the night, and their flash patterns are different. So you're looking for a variety of things.
Flash patterns. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but that's important, though, because there some of them actually live in the leaf litter. So there are some species whose females are larva form, which means they never grow wings. They never actually leave the leaf litter. Sometimes they light up, sometimes they don't.
I always think eggs. Is that not it?
Sort of the stage after eggs. So once the eggs hatch, you get larvae. Okay. And there are some females that actually are sexually mature as larvae, which means they don't transform into adults, which means you may, by mowing your grass too frequently, for example, you could wind up destroying some of these populations of that particular species because they can't fly away. And so sometimes the species that you might be looking for are actually hiding under your feet.
Wow. Well, that's kind of amazing to think about. Well, I keep thinking of more questions I want to find out. So let's talk first then about how they are in the grass and all those sorts of things. So should you keep your grass a little higher? I mean, or what should you do to attract them to your yard?
Well, I cut my grass, let's be fair. But I try not to cut it until it is just absolutely driving me nuts. You know, when my dog doesn't want to go outside because the grass is too tall, then I'll cut it. But I always have some areas of my yard that are left uncut. I have a whole corner of my yard that I've never cut since I've lived there. So I try to keep enough vegetation for things to live in. So, I share my yard with this other wildlife. So,
Will they go find that area then with the taller grass and stay out of the area where you're likely to mow? Do they?
Yeah, they do. You know, keeping some of your lawn a little bit higher is important, not just for fireflies, but for native bees and for butterflies and all kinds of pollinators. A lot of people have white clover or dandelion in their yard, which is wonderful. Lots of violets, lots of other things that if you let your grass grow a little bit taller, a lot of different invertebrates will use that patch. And if you grow it, they will come.
Well, it's interesting you talk about that white clover, and there are people that are like, oh my gosh, my yard looks horrible because it has this violet or this white clover in it, and really that's not so bad?
We have a very European sort of British aesthetic when it comes to lawns. You know, we like things fairly formal. You know, we like to collect different types of plants in our yard. So really it's a matter of aesthetics more than anything. You know, naturally speaking, not mowing your grass is probably the best thing you could do because things aren't adapted to living in a system where, you know, once a week these blades come at them, you know, at hundreds of miles an hour. So it is better, but again, I mowed my grass last weekend, so...
But you let the clover grow, maybe. I don't know. You don't treat it.
I try not to. Yeah, I don't, and I certainly don't use insecticides or herbicides on my lawn, at least.
Let's talk about the lighting up process and how it happens. What's in a firefly and a lightning bug to make it glow?
Well, you know, it's bioluminescence. That's what we're talking about here. That something that's biological is producing a cold chemical reaction in the abdomen. 90% light, 10% heat. So it's just the opposite of one of these incandescent bulbs where it's 90% heat and 10% light. So that's how come they don't burn their butts when they light. And it's a chemical reaction. There's luciferin and luciferase, which is a protein and an enzyme. And then oxygen and nitrous oxide. It's a variety of chemicals that produce this reaction.
And the fireflies can't actually... control the flashing. So they control when it begins and when it ends just by controlling some of the more recent research suggests that by controlling the nitric oxide that they can actually control when it's going to light up.
So you talk about flash patterns. You mentioned that earlier. Different lightning bugs have different patterns. I mean, what are they trying to say? It's not Morse code. I mean, what is it?
Kind of.
It is. Yeah. So each species has a slightly different flash pattern. Some are synchronous, which means you'll have thousands, you know, hundreds of thousands of fireflies lighting up at the exact same time. Others are not synchronous. And they're really, though, all saying the same thing. They're all having the same conversation. They're looking for a date.
Isn't that always what the peacocks?
And what's really fascinating, we were talking about this earlier, most of the time females will respond to the males, and the males are the loud ones. They're the ones that are blinking all the time because they're just looking for and the females are waiting until they see a flash pattern they like, and then they'll respond to tell the male that she's interested. But there's a species locally that the females will actually they will mimic the flash pattern of a different species male, or a different species female, I should say. When one of those males of that other species sees her, he thinks, oh, she's interested. I'm going to go have a date. When he arrives, she eats him.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's that flash pattern, even though it is entirely just really intended to find mates, you have this one species that has found a way of cheating the system and using that flash pattern to basically order takeout, I guess.
That's a good way to put it. And you might wonder, well, you know, why just this one species or a genera? It's the Photurus is what the genera is. And the thing is that they're looking for the chemicals. The fireflies that she's eating have a defensive chemical in their blood, and she wants that defensive chemical so that she can pass it on to her offspring. She doesn't naturally produce it, so she eats it by eating another one of these.
And then you call it defensive. It helps them later?
It tastes terrible. Actually, people don't know this, but there's fireflies that actually eat milkweed blossoms. They eat the chemicals that's in milk that toxic chemical in milkweed. And they also produce their own chemicals in their bodies that there's a sticky substance that they gum up the mouth of their predators with. And then there's other foul-tasting substances that they produce.
Have you ever smelled your fingers when you've caught a firefly?
It's been a while.
So, well, tonight when you're out in your yard catching fireflies, you'll actually smell this. I can't even describe it. It smells like fireflies.
Yeah.
It's the same chemical. So that smell is actually one of their ways of reducing predation.
And I guess they don't really help humans to have that smell on your...
No. Well, it doesn't help. But supposedly that there are sort of lethal doses of fireflies where, you know, if you ate enough, it could make you pretty sick.
Yeah, I've read 20 fireflies.
Is that it?
Yep, will make you very sick.
Nothing like talking about glowworms, fireflies today. They're called all of those sorts of things, lightning bugs. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, and my guests are Director of Conservation and Stewardship at the Cincinnati Nature Center, Corey Christopher, and Education Director at the Center, Connie O'Connor. You can join the conversation if you have a question. This is your opportunity, 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Well, we've talked all about the glowing, and we've talked about the lighting up and the flash patterns. We have not talked about the color. I always thought they were only yellow, but that's not true. There are other colors. Tell me more.
There are other colors. So there are some that supposedly flash more blue, some that flash more green. What I've learned, and especially from Lynn Faust when she came into town, I'm too old to see the difference. Some of the differences in color, it's just so subtle that even she acknowledged that she's not able to tell the difference between the colors that much anymore. So really some of the things, if you're interested in what type of firefly you're looking at, it's really where are you seeing it, when are you seeing it, and even how long or what was the repeat or the repeat sequence from when it was flashing.
So it's not so much at the color. Can the firefly see the different colors? I mean,
well, she
or do
says
we, know?
We don't know. Short answer.
But she did say that she didn't think that it was that important to the firefly, that the color was not as important as the sequence when a firefly is looking for their species. I think it has something to do with the color of the skin on the abdomen, from what I recall, but which, you know, sort of like a filter over a lens, you know. But I think it's pretty subtle.
We've talked about the substance that makes them light up. There was a time when humans used that for something or needed it. What did they use it for?
They used it, well, in medical applications. There's actually quite a few medical applications for those chemicals. They are used to detect cancer cells and a variety of other things that I can't remember offhand. But there used to be labs where they would pay kids a penny for a certain number of fireflies. Yeah. They don't need to do that anymore because they can create those substances artificially now in the lab.
And some of the compounds are used in like crime scene investigation, mm-hmm. where you spray a compound and it can tell you if blood's there. It's the same group of compounds is can be used for crime detection.
I do want to talk a little bit about catching them. You talk about kids catching them. And I remember a heartbreaking experience I had as a kid. I was not old enough to know better, and I guess my mom didn't think about it. We got an old peanut butter jar, glass jar, and poked all kinds of holes in the top, and I caught the fireflies, and we had them in the garage, and I got up the next morning, and they were all dead. Mm-hmm. And I was devastated. I felt bad because I'd killed all these beautiful glowing insects. Keeping them in a jar is not a good idea, I'm guessing. I think I had too many, frankly, but is it a good idea just catch and let go, catch and release if you want to take a look? What do you say?
I catch them with my daughters, and I caught them as a kid, and, you know, lots of the neighborhood kids did much worse things with them than keep them in a jar, unfortunately. There's nothing wrong with catching them. I think what you have to keep in mind is that if you're going to keep them in a jar, the air holes are a great idea, but they need moisture. So, you know, wetting an unbleached coffee filter or putting a little slice of apple in there with them, just something to give them enough moisture to survive. And then keeping in mind that these guys are looking for dates and they're not here very long. You know, they may only live a couple weeks when they're adults. So instead of keeping them inside all night, release them that night so you can enjoy them for a couple hours, but then release them so that they can go about their dating life, so to speak.
And you won't wake up like I did, just devastated
right.
with what happened with
You know,
them.
The other thing that can happen when you put them in a jar is if you have those predatory ones, the Futurus genera, and then you have the Photinus, which are the ones that are not predatory, they might be eating one another in that jar as well. Another thing to keep in mind is that—
A little more science than I'd like to watch.
That's right. Another thing to keep in mind is the ones that are the predatory ones, the Photurus, when you catch them, they get mad and they'll blink like crazy. They'll be blink, 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 blink. And you'll think, oh, they're happy. No, they're really mad. The other species, the Photinus, the ones like the flying jays, when they're stressed, they go dark. You'll catch them in a jar and you won't see them because they're not going to blink. They're just shutting down.
When you release them, do you just take the lid off and let them go,
yep.
or you don't have to like dump them out?
Yeah, no, you just let them go.
They'll crawl out and fly away.
Now, one of the things I read that was a little disappointing to me is if you want to plant a good area for fireflies, you are also going to attract mosquitoes. They like the same environments. Is that right?
Well, mosquitoes need standing water. You know, they need still standing water. So if you have a humid area with lots of vegetation, as long as it's well drained, you're not necessarily going to attract mosquitoes. I mean, at least mosquito larvae. I have a lot of fireflies in my yard, and I don't have any more of a problem with mosquitoes, I think, than anyone else does. So mm-hmm. I think they may like the same habitat, but I think their requirements, especially for the standing water piece, is so restrictive for mosquitoes mm-hmm. that I wouldn't be discouraged from.
You just put a couple bats in there. Don't they eat 10,000 mosquitoes?
Sure, yeah, right, right.
I don't know the number, I'm guessing, but it's a lot. It's in the thousands from what I've heard. Very good. Well, if anything else you can, and it's just a minute or two that we have left, anything else you can say to encourage people to get some more fireflies in the yard? The populations, I heard, were dwindling a little bit.
They are. I think one of the things to keep in mind is habitat. As Corey said, you don't need standing water, but there's four cycles. You know, they lay their eggs. Those eggs hatch in moist soil in 3 to 5 days. Then they spend up to 2 years in a larva form. It looks a little bit like a pill bug or a sow bug.
2 years?
Yeah, uh-huh. Up to 2 years, depending on the environment, the temperature and so forth. But they're crawling around in the leaf litter, so you want thatch on your lawn. You don't want to collect all your leaves. You don't want to collect all your, you know, your cut grass. You want some vegetation because they're crawling around under there looking for snails and slugs and things like that to eat. And then they pupate in the soil and then, you know, they come out as adults. So if you have vegetation and you have thatch and you have some moist soil, and here's the big thing, don't have all your lights on. Everybody loves to have all these beautiful little solar lights and, you know, those projection lights that have dots all over the trees. That confuses the heck out of the fireflies. They can't find one another when there's too much light. So put your lights out for parties, you know, let them have all your fancy lights out and then put them away for the season, at least while the fireflies are looking for a mate.
Very good. So, you said some taller grasses and things like that. You talked mm-hmm. about that thatch that you want to have to keep the a good habitat mm-hmm. for them. Any other, you know, some people don't like to leave the grass just laying there. I mean, is it, you need a lot of it or just enough?
No, just a little. If you cut your grass, you know, periodically, as long as you're not waiting till it gets, you know, knee high, you could just let your clippings lie and they'll decompose in the summer pretty quickly.
Good. And you're not creating places for moles and other things to get in there, are you?
Well, a lot of people just really don't want grubs in their yard. And so they put all of these chemicals in their yard to reduce the grubs, because if they have grubs, they're going to get, all these other things. For me, I try to have the philosophy that, you know, there are some areas of my yard that I don't want moles. But for the most part, I'm sharing my yard with all this other wildlife. So, you know, if I have to have a few moles in my yard so that I can have some firefly habitat, then so be it.
And do they have natural predators? Do lightning bugs have?
You know, that's interesting. We were talking about that on the way here. And at first I was really confused because they have all these defensive chemicals. Very few things can eat them. But spiders eat them a lot. All kinds of spiders eat them. And guess what eats spiders? Birds. Parent birds feed their baby birds caterpillars and spiders. So by having fireflies in your yard, you're feeding spiders, which then feed birds. And most people love to see birds in their yard. So they're absolutely essential in the food chain.
Big cycle of life there.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure to talk with both of you.
Thank you.
I've learned so much. I really have. We've been talking about fireflies today. My guests today were Director of Conservation and Stewardship at the Cincinnati Nature Center, Corey Christopher, and Education Director at the Center, Connie O'Connor.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.